That was the Grateful Dead. Cumberland Blues from Working Man's Dead, 1970, 69, 70, something like that. The remastered version, the version you want to hear because the banjo part is prominent. Yes, you heard it. Hear it again. No, right. Mr. Jerry Garcia on the banjo. Ah, how awesome is that? I was reading about this just the other day. Apparently, when this album came out, and I remember this distinctly, the banjo was very subdued in the background. You could hardly hear it. And they have reissued it, and they have given the banjo its proper prominence in the recording, as it should be. And it's hot and cold on Saturday morning. Did you know that? Just in case, you just turned on, it isn't the banjo. It could be the banjo show. Oh, we could have such fun. But it's not. It's hot and cold. It's me, Tom. Good morning. 8:10 on Saturday. And it's flinging the fall down in Searsport, Maine today. I'd rather fling in the spring than fling in the fall. But then again, hopefully it will stop raining here soon. And they'll be doing a lot of flinging down there. And that'll be good. Big stuff going on. If you're out leaf peeping, you want to stop in Searsport downtown and see what's going on. Or you could stop into the Prius store in Stockton Springs and see what's going on there. Oh, by the way, some listeners came in yesterday, and I have to apologize because I didn't know. One of the folks said hi to me. I had my hands in. You'll find this hard to believe. I know you'll find it hard to believe. I had rubber gloves on them. I had my hands in adhesive, waiting for the adhesive to kick in enough that I could remove my hand. It kept falling out. And I did not hear them, and I apologize. I usually somebody comes in. Maria was waiting on them. I apologize. Come back in again, and we can chat sometime. I don't want people to think I'm ignoring them. I just was underneath a vehicle, kind of underneath a vehicle. My hands were underneath the vehicle waiting for stuff to set up, and it just wasn't doing it because it was just a little too cool or there wasn't enough stuff mixed in to make it set up quicker, but so it goes, you know. So I felt terrible. Maria said they said hi, and I did not hear them, and I'm embarrassed. And it's easy for me to get embarrassed. I could do a lot of things in a given day to be embarrassed, but one thing I've done in the past week, though, that's not embarrassing and is a guilt, has turned into my guilty pleasure as a change of pace. And God knows we all need changes of pace once in a blue moon. And last Saturday, after the radio show, Maria was in holding down the fort. So I went over and we were doing different things. And I had in the back room of the office for the past 12, at least, years, a pile of shingles. And I said, today's the day I'm going to start shingling the front of the office. And Pete had been lamenting the fact that I should have a pneumatic nailer to put up the shingles. Well, no, this is the part of the thing of shingling is the therapy of putting one shingle up at a time and taking the hammer, go boom, 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 two nails in each shingle. And you do that hundreds, if not thousands of times. It's therapy. And I went back Sunday, did more with my headphones on, listening to the tunes. And it doesn't get any better than that. It's a mindless activity. You don't have to think about anything. You don't worry about somebody's car. You don't worry about how am I going to pay this bill or that bill? You just shingle. And the lament is, I have run out of shingles. I'm not done shingling. I'm going to buy more shingles today. I will be over at Viking Lumber getting one more square. I think one more square will do. I have an area that I put the tar paper to 12, 13 years ago. And it's time to shingle. I started shingling, if you can believe that. Just one course, part of a course at the bottom, and I have gotten back to that wall. I'm on a shingling jag, man. I tell you what, I am into the shingling groove, and I realized I had a bunch of shingle, more shingle nails than I will ever need in the rest of my life. I think I bought, I bought a lot of them at Martin's probably 15 years ago when Martin's had really good deals, especially on things like nails. And I've got a, I got lots. So I'm just going to keep shingling. I'm just going to go through town. Anybody needs some shingling done, I tell you what, Tom's going to be there. So it's, and the 12-year-old shingles were mostly bundles. Some of the bundles had, every bundle I picked up, by the way, fell apart as soon as I picked it up. The straps weakened or something, just, they all fell on the ground, you know, as full bundles. And they were still wet. I'm fascinated by that. Sitting for 12 years indoors, they still had moisture in the shingle. They still felt damp. And of course, no rot because it's cedar. And it's all good. It was a lot of fun. And I am just looking so forward to the next run. And it may be I'm hoping it's today. I want the rain to stop. I may go flinging a little bit downtown, but I'm going to be shingling instead of flinging. I'll be flinging shingles. I got to fling a break right now, so we're going to take a quick break. We come back. Take your calls. It's hot and cold. All right, we're back. 8:20, it's hot and cold on Saturday morning with the rock and the roll. That's Warren Zevon, Bruce Springsteen, Disorder in the House. An album that Warren Zevon recorded as he was dying from mesothelioma. It took a long time to record the album because he had trouble breathing. And did the whole album, though. It took a while. He got mesothelioma from playing in the attic of his father's store, which was insulated with asbestos. Oh, God, you know, of all the... I can't not say something about Ginger Baker this week passing away. If you want to get a background as to a little bit, a glimmer of what he was all about, you get on YouTube and look up Beware of Mr. Baker. It's about an hour and a half video or film about Ginger Baker. And he had this really wicked, almost nasty attitude with many people. But he was, and many folks have said this, he was just the sweetest man. And it came through on the video, and if you read some of the things about him, you'll see that. And what I found fascinating about him was he and Jack Bruce were like, they would have physical fights when they were in Cream and in particular, and they were kind of like, but it turns out they were like brothers, you know, who would fight. Fascinating because they reunited at some point. These two guys who drove Eric Clapton crazy in Cream because they were always fighting, reunited without Eric at some point in the 90s and played together. I found that I was on a Eric Clapton jag last, not Eric Clapton, a Ginger Baker jag. I heard he had gone. We had lost him. Found that video of them playing together, all smiles. So, two great artists gone too soon. I've got phone number 1-800-966-1039. We got the text lines up and running. 607. Let's do that again. 601-207-4478 is the text line. 601-207-4478. The phone line 1-800-966-1039. We'll go to the phones. There we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom, I got a question for you on a crack in the foundation.
Yeah.
It's a frost wall, 4 or 5 feet deep. It runs diagonally. It's in an unheated garage. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of unsightly above grade. It's kind of blown out a little bit. As I dig down about a foot and a half, I see the crack. It runs diagonally down. It's about a half inch wide. And it's been there probably 35 years, something like that.
Yeah.
There never seems to be an issue inside with the doors or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I want to patch the top side with some patch cement, so it's kind of unsightly.
Yeah.
But seeing as I've dug down and dried that crack out, I've got some polyurethane, like cement repair stuff.
Mm.
It comes in a tube.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if I should bother filling that crack down below grade or just leave it as is.
No, I would if you've got it exposed, I would fix it. You know, I would patch it. This is, you know, a great opportunity. Because there's always that potential of moisture getting in there and freezing and driving it apart. So sealing it is kind of critical. You know, especially, I mean, if you hadn't dug it out, it's okay. But you've dug it out, you might as well do it.
I see. Okay. Very good. I guess okay. You've answered my question.
Okay. Thanks. Good luck.
Thank you.
Take care. You're welcome. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, cracks are, you know, they may be stable. And it sounds like it is. And it may have just been a flaw. And when it was poured, maybe didn't put rebar in, whatever. Patch it. It's doesn't take much to do. And the outside part is critical. The inside part is more maybe aesthetics. The outside part where moisture is getting in is really important. So please do that. Let's see. What else we got here? Papa Bear wants to know when Pete's on. Hey, maybe today. He's in town. So we'll see how that plays out. you're member three of his fan club. So I'm keeping count. And he was glad to hear that folks were looking for him last week. So the other big deal in my little world of stuff is, you know, it's getting colder out, as you know, and my heating system has been in pieces for about 4 or 5 months now, with all the plumbing stuff spread out on the most of the plumbing stuff spread out on the floor. It would be an odd fitting I needed. I needed some 3/4-inch crimp rings, so I ordered them. I didn't buy them locally because I usually buy a lot when I buy them. So those came in, and I've been picking at it during the week, and I'm redesigning things, and the whole thing I'm doing is a big experiment. So you know, it takes a while for these things to gel in my simple brain as the brain cells become fewer as I age. But I around 9:30 last night, I had the motivation, and I went downstairs, and I I wasn't going to do much. And then I just got going. You know, once you get rolling, man, it's like shingling. Once you get going, so I got all the return lines from the 5 zones of heat all tied in. All I've got to do is hook up the circulator pumps now, and 5 circulator pumps. I've got those all put together, and I'm just trying to pick the right spot, and that then we'll be ready to at least do something. We can test things and see how they work, test the zones. So my wife comes down about, you know, a couple hours later, and she says, you know, all of a sudden there's banging in the basement. You know, I'm hammering on things, and you know, not when I get home at 5 o'clock or something, or 6 o'clock, but excuse me, 10 o'clock at night, all of a sudden the spirit moves me, and we made good progress. So there really wasn't that much to do. It was just a matter I had to take apart some of what I had put together, and for some reason just kind of put it off. We have not poured our slab yet. Pete was away, and then he got back, and it wasn't time. You know, there wasn't time. We had orders to get out. So this coming week, though, I think the slab's going to go in, and that'll be good. Then we'll be ready to start building something. My goodness. Oh, the other big deal this week, Marie and I, we're doing a lot of, Pete was away for a couple of days, so Marie and I were doing a lot of projects, and we had a pellet stove in the back room of the shop. I had it in the back of my pickup for about 3 weeks, and I figured out a way to get it off the pickup by myself, which I did, and got it into the back room. And it's not a real heavy pellet stove. It's probably 200 pounds, but it's a little unwieldy. So then we got it in. Maria, God bless her, being intelligent like her mother, you know, we're dragging around this pellet stove. I'm getting ready to drag it in and try to get it in place. And she said, why don't you get those things with the wheels? I have these dollies that you put on their car tires. So you can, if you have a car in the shop, you can roll it around the shop. I have 4 of them. And I've never used them for a car. I had staging on it for a while, and now last week we put the pellet stove on it. We could roll it around the shop or the office as we were getting things set up. We had to get a hearth down on the floor. Then we had to situate it to get the vent out through. So the thimble is in place, the vent's in place, the stove is in place. It's not hooked up yet in terms of I'm changing out some controls on it. But it's in place, and last night after everybody left, I painted it in the office, because why not? Isn't that what the office is for, is to paint a stove? So, also in the process, we took down a bunch of shelves where the stove was going, everything kind of got organized. So, what really helped organize things was that big pile of shingles that was in the back room. It was removed and put on the building where it should be, where they should be. So all of a sudden, all this floor space opened up in the back room. And we seem to be making progress that it unparalleled. You do this and you kind of get to a point where you think, I can't keep up this frantic pace. Speaking of frantic pace, it's time for another commercial. We'll be back in just a bit. It's 8:30 straight up. It's hot and cold Saturday mornings. Me, Tom, and we'll see you in a bit. Okay, we're back. It's 8:37. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Sam and Kirk McGee. I was given this album by a friend of mine in, am I dating myself now, 1971, and I couldn't believe that. I mean, these guys were just something else. They traveled with Uncle Dave Macon. They were his backup band. They're something else. And one of them's playing the banjo guitar. One of them's playing the banjo. Sam's playing the banjo guitar, and Kirk is playing the banjo. You wanted to know that, I know. So, anyway. And they're I think they're on Folkways. It's just this Smithsonian recording. They have a number of their things. So, anyway. For what that's worth, that's good stuff. And other good stuff you need to know about is our friend Alan over at General Appliance and Brewer on Center Street, open 9 to 4 Monday through Friday. If you're looking for appliance parts or service, composting toilets, gas appliances, any number of things to make living out in the woods a civilized endeavor, and living in your home with proper functioning home appliances a civilized occupation. Is there a difference there? I'm not sure. You need to know the phone number, 989-4341. Alan will make sure these things work right for you. He has parts and service for everything related to home appliances, composting toilets, gas Empire heaters, which do not need electricity to operate, but are sealed combustion and efficient, and will keep you warm if you want to operate with propane or even natural gas. So no, phone number is 989-4341. 989-4341 if you'd like to check in with him. And our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. And our text line, of course, is 601-207-4478. Over to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Morning, Tom.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay. I just want to take a second and vent my frustration, possibly my anger.
Uh-oh.
Over the complexity. No, nothing with the show.
Okay.
The show's very good.
Have you scared there for a minute?
But, no, the complexity of these vehicles that are out there now, doing some work on a 2005 Nissan Titan pickup truck.
Yeah.
It's got the 32-valve V8 in it. And I'm reading through the manual, and it says in order to do what used to be a fairly straightforward, simple job, just simply replacing a head gasket, you have to pull the motor out of the truck to put a head gasket or do any valve work on it.
Yeah.
And it's like a lot of Ford products nowadays with the pickups. You have to pull the cab off in order to get at the engine and do any work.
Well, that seems like a simple endeavor. I mean, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, let's do that. I was amazed when I had a truck once and needed some work on the gas tank, and they pulled the bed off, which is not really that big a deal to do. But,
right.
I mean, to have to pull the motor out to do a head gasket, is stupefying. You know, I was having this conversation with somebody yesterday, and the we were talking about the new Priuses, the four-wheel drive Priuses, where the rear two wheels are electric motors now. And and that's sort of, to me, a transitory step towards a two- or four-wheel drive electric vehicle for motors at each wheel hub, which in theory would be simpler. In reality, I think it's not going to be, and it's all electronic, which may mean, I'm hoping I'm wrong, may mean dealer-only service. I suspect that won't be the case because companies like Snap-on continue to come out with new diagnostic tools to, interface. Yeah. Like Snap-on's high-end diagnostic tool will get into Priuses and let you do everything I can do with a dealer computer. The catch is it's $7,000 or $8,000 plus some kind of annual fee, I'm sure. And
somebody like you do a lot of Prius work. Maybe it's justifiable or cost effective, but for the average gas station repair shop, independent, whatever. It's, never mind the electronics. I'm just basically squawking about the mechanical end of it. Having worked on vehicles for 50 years, I've worked on everything from V12 Jaguars to Porsches to, I went to Maserati school for the biturbos back in the mid to late 80s. They were complex and labor intensive, but nowadays, just a pickup truck, to have to pull the motor out to do a head gasket.
Yeah.
It's just insane. I don't know what these engineers, are thinking about. Then you add on to the compounding factor all the electronic stuff.
Yeah.
Everything's all sensors and modules and whatnot. I don't know. I don't know where we're going. Jeez, please. I'd really love it when, I tend to work on some older stuff occasionally. I've got a customer with a Morris Minor, a 1958 Morris Minor, and it's a joy to work on some old piece of British iron like that compared to this new stuff.
Well, when I was a kid, I had Volkswagens, and I knew nothing about dealing with them, and it used to drive me crazy. I didn't know what I was doing, so it was challenging, and I thought, oh my God, you got to pull the engine on a Volkswagen, heaven. It is now it is blissful heaven for me to think about working on a Volkswagen, and the cool thing is that a lot of folks are changing over the old air-cooled Volkswagens to electric, and they get even simpler because the motor is so much smaller, and that engine bay, which seemed overwhelming to me as a youth, now it's easy to work on, but it's even easier if they're these guys who do the conversions to electric because there's so much room, and everything is clean. The whole engine bay is spotless because there's no oil spewing. So it's going to be fun to see how it plays out. Tesla is a great example of this too, because as an example, a lot of folks who couldn't afford any other way afford a Tesla might buy one that was in an accident, rebuild it, they will not reactivate the car for you until they approve of the rebuild.
This
is kind of a big brother kind of thing. I appreciate what they're trying to do, but by the same token, this is kind of a free country.
It used to be fun to work on things, but like I said, between the electronics and now this labor intensive complexity that we're into, all the fun is gone until, like I said, until something old runs, comes into the driveway. I've got another customer with a 74 Mercedes, which is, just a little four-cylinder. I've got a good friend of mine with a, I don't know if I should mention the name of the vehicle. Well, anyway, it's a state out west that starts off with COLO, and that's the name of the truck. And a four-cylinder motor, so complex that it's beyond comprehension why they would make something like this that has so many pieces and parts that are again labor intensive to do and expensive also, because obviously you got to reflect the cost of $60, $80, $100 an hour to do these things. And I don't know. I guess, yeah, the answer is just buy a new vehicle every 2 or 3 years.
Sure.
Be done with it.
We all can do that.
But you're getting deeper into the hole, too. I mean, you know, like I said, I'm complaining about vehicles that are 14, 15 years old. But nowadays, what the new stuff is like, I don't know. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it at night, but we live in a completely different world than what it used to be.
Well, you know, I had a flurry of a problem with Priuses in the past couple of weeks. The display on the second generation Prius 04-09, that shows the speed, excuse me, the odometer and everything. It's called a combination meter, and it's electronic. And on older cars, they go blank. Car still runs, but it scares the hell out of you when it happens if you don't know what it is. And with me, it kind of freaked me out. But it's fixable. And, well, the deal is if you go to a dealer, it's a fixable $1,500 deal. You have to take out the dashboard. I have to say, I'm pretty good at, you know, I'm really good at taking out Prius batteries now. Pretty darn good at getting dashboards out of Priuses as well to do the combination meter. Well, the first one I did, I sent out, and it cost $150, but it tied up the car for about a week and a half. I found that there's usually a single component that goes on these things, and I have a friend who's an electronics technician who I had doing the repairs for me, but he's been out of state for a while. So, and I had 1, 2, 3, 4 happen at three on my cars.
Oh.
All at once, and it happens at change of weather. And it's just this component, the change in temperature makes it act up. So I had a soldering station I loaned out to some guy, and I thought I'm never going to see it again. So I bought another soldering station. And I did my first one, which was a car we were getting ready to sell, and it worked. And then I just did another one for a customer this week. And so that's two of the four that I but I mean, you know, you spend probably a half hour taking the car apart to get the thing out. Then you take the dashboard apart to get the combination meter out. And, you know, now you're doing, you know, component level electronics repair. And I do them for a couple $100 for customers because it's stupefyingly expensive. The first one I ever came across was a car that I bought. High miles, belonged to somebody from Northeast Harbor. They apparently dealer maintained it. It was pristine, 200K on it. And why would this car have been traded in? The 200,000 miles didn't seem to be an issue. The car ran great, and the car is still running, by the way. And I discovered the problem when one day in March, I start up the car and there's no displays anywhere.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, long story, not much longer.
So they got the price from the dealer as to how much it was.
Yeah, so I realized that they were in at the dealer, and they said whatever the magic number is. I've never priced it with them, but I know it's got to be at least $1,500 just from the labor point of view of taking the dash apart. And they said, well, we'll just buy a new car, which was fine because I got the old one, and it was a really nice car. But
and it's still on the road. So.
And it's still on the road. You know, that's the thing that it's sort of been my goal. It's kind of like yours. I do it with Priuses. Is, you know, let's keep them running and keep them as affordable as we can. So
But it's getting harder and harder with people though. When you give them these estimates as to what it's going to cost, and they look at you like, are you telling a joke? Are you trying to make a funny comment or something? You know. But it even goes down to, you know, just about any kind of a vehicle. You know, I've got a friend of mine, too. He's complaining about one of his late model Subaru Outbacks, I guess it is. And, you know, it's drive-by-wire, I mean, as far as the throttle goes.
Mm.
No more mechanical throttles. It's all electronic potentiometers.
Yeah.
And, he called up the dealer, and they said, well, it's $1,000 for the part.
Yeah.
And then you add on the labor for just straightening out a throttle response problem. You know, you had a dead pedal situation where there wasn't any message or whatever coming back or going to the throttle switch. And but, you know, right off the bat, $1,000 just for the electronic part.
And, you know, a lot of these parts are, like you say, are potentiometers. These are 35-cent parts. They're not expensive. and they fail, and that's fine. I mean, things wear out, especially something that's a moving part. But man, it just is it's daunting. And you know, what do you do? You have to have the part, so you're either buying new or you're buying used. And
Anyway. Well, you know, go back to the simpler days. I've got a friend of mine who's got a 73 or 74 MGB, and his throttle cable broke, and it's not something anybody keeps on the shelf any longer. Those MGBs, I think 1980 was the last year they brought those in. So he rigged up a wire, you know, just a piece of electrical wire to the throttle at the carburetor. It's a single carburetor on that model, and he draped it through the engine compartment and then off into the passenger's compartment until he could finally get the original cable put in, and he'd pull on the throttle cable with one hand while he was driving with the other hand just to be able to still get the car and, you know, moving and going around. So, but that type of ingenuity doesn't work with all these little electronic things.
No, when you're dead, it's dead. That's why I got AAA. Well, just for those moments.
Yeah. All right, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Hang in there.
You too.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, it reminds me, when I was a kid, I had a Volkswagen bus, and that had a throttle cable that went from the front of the bus to the back of the bus where the throttle was. And that throttle cable broke one day on a traffic circle in New Jersey. It was an exciting day. And I went to a place like Home Depot at that time and bought a coil of baling wire and I got it running. Didn't run real great. And at lunchtime I went to, we were on a job, and I found a Volkswagen dealer, and I went and bought the official throttle cable and put it in on the side of the road. It was a good time. You know, there's those moments that make you appreciate when things are working, preventive maintenance, and when things work well. We've got a moment here or two before we have to take a break. The other thing that was a big accomplishment this week is I finally got to put some wool wax on a vehicle, and it worked out well. And as I think I mentioned, they make two different wool waxes. They make one that's amber color and one that is black. And this is an undercoating, in case you're not up to speed on this conversation we've had over ongoing past weeks. And it doesn't smell like fluid film does. And so I put some amber on a customer's car. So I guess I'm almost ready to roll in terms of doing this on a routine basis. A few things I want to tweak in terms of the way we use the lift. But it went well. And I'm going to give the black a try on one of my vehicles and see how that looks. And it's just an aesthetic thing at this point, in terms of whether it's amber color, which is basically transparent, or black. But just the fact it doesn't smell. And I've got a half gallon of fluid film I still got to use up, but and I will. I was thinking maybe I could make some. It won't smell as much. Or maybe not. Anyway, we're going to take a break. We come out of the break, hour number two. Let's see. Do I have music? I don't even have music queued. Oh, I do have music queued up. Oh, you know, the preparation that goes into this radio program, I just want you to know that it just boggles my mind that you get these hours of preparation. I mean, the music is queued up here. Can you beat that? I don't think so. Anyway, our phone number for next hour, 1-800-966-1039. Text is 601-207-4478. And Dave, I guess the beginning of the next hour, right after the break, Dave says he's got a lot of questions. So, so we'll chat with Dave from Bradley after the break. I guess we should, this is a long enough cut. We could go right through the break if we wanted to, but we'll just get the good parts. It's hot and cold. Stay with us. We'll be back in a bit. Well, it is so. It's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning, boys. It is true. And we're back, 906, hot and cold. It's me, Tom. Phone number's 1-800-966-1039. We got the text line, 601-207-4478, if you'd like to call or text or whatever the magic media is that is your comfort level. I got a new computer last week. I told you last week we got one for my wife. I got one as well. I also got a MacBook Air, and it came with a 250 gigabyte solid state drive. Air doesn't have any moving parts in it, and I had like 230 gigabytes of stuff on my computer, much of which is probably stuff that I don't need, but certainly the Tune machine can't be disrupted. But I have pictures of every damn Prius I ever had, I think, and I don't need all those Prius pictures. So at some point, I'm really bored or I'm sick, I'll sit there and get rid of them. But I got a terabyte memory. I'll call it a card. It's a hard drive, replaces the hard drive. And we are struggling to get that formatted. I got the computer up and running real easy. Then the email wouldn't work. I now have it so I can receive email. I can't send it. Don't ask me why. Maria's going to have to fix it for me because I'm too old and inane to do it myself, apparently. And what was the other thing? We updated to the Catalina, the new operating system, which means nothing to me except a bunch of stuff that I had on the computer no longer works software-wise, but that's okay. Let's see. That's one of my other – when I get the heating system done, I will then play with the – or if I get bored working on the heating system, or I just hit a computational deadlock where I just have to step back away from it because I'm not quite sure what I want to do, I'll have at the computer. Because I like these, you know, as Tom was saying, these things that are extraordinarily frustrating, they're a good time. I usually try to avoid a lot of the mechanic work that would be in the category of driving one crazy. Although I did one last week, which was a coolant control valve. And I know I've done them before, and it's not that hard to do. It's three hoses, it's an electronic valve, and they act up on occasion. Not terribly expensive to replace. And to access it, you have to work from the top of the engine and from underneath the engine. And I guess maybe I was lying on the ground when I did it before. But now that I have a lift, the car went up and down. I had the car up and down about five times in the process of getting this stupid valve out. But I did it. There wasn't a lot of swearing. There was a lot of spilled antifreeze, but I caught a lot of it, so it wasn't all over the floor. And I believe it all functions properly. Heat was working when I let the car go. So that's always a good sign when you do that kind of thing. If the heat is not working and then it works, you know you've done God's work. Let's go to the phones at 1-800-966-1039. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Morning. It's Dave.
Dave, ominous list of stuff you got here. What's going on?
Well, first let me tell you the horror story. My father-in-law built a really nice house back probably 25 years ago. It was tight. It heat tremendously easily, and the government came along to offer him a heat pump water heater and this and that and the other thing, and then they came back with more stuff and found out he only had like 8 inches of fiberglass in the attic, so they wanted to add that, but they had to proper vent it and they had to do this, and then it was too tight and they had to add fans. Well, no, it doesn't add up, but anyway, they had to add fans in the bathroom and this and that, and for air quality reasons. And then they had to have air inlets because, of course, he would just open the window.
Yeah.
But then, so they had to do this and they had to, and it's like a never ending things of this, that, and the other to make the house more efficient when they could have just blown in 12 inches of cellulose and accomplished 99% of what was needed.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that with the prop events in particular. Years ago when I had a big house on Broadway and there wasn't a drop of insulation in it. And, the question was put to me about, ventilating the attic. I wanted, I think we put about, 16 inches of cellulose up in the attic. And, well, what about prop events? No, Don't put any in. Well, why? Well, it's a slate roof. It's 150 at the time, 150-year-old house. The roofing boards have all shrunk back, and there's plenty of ventilation up there. And there was never a hint of moisture buildup in the attic after the fact, and it just would have been a big hassle to do. And I agree with your with you and your father-in-law. You know, you crack a window, and then when the window's closed, there's no leakage or worrying about dampers or condensation in the hose vent, you know, the vent hose, excuse me. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It goes.
So how did you keep the the cellulose from going out into the soffits and the eaves if you didn't use proper vent?
I just mounted that sucker right up. If it went out in the eave, that was fine. I didn't care. Okay. And it was never
like that. It builds up moisture sometimes and rots them out.
It didn't get out into the eaves. It wasn't open. As I recall, I was all through that house looking for the hidden cache of money or jewels. You know, anytime I opened up a wall to run wiring, I had a mirror and a flashlight, and I did find stuff. The most impressive stuff was dead animals, but, anyway,
nothing that made you rich.
Nothing made me rich. I'm still here.
Yeah. Well, okay. To my questions, this might be a good review for everybody as to cover a bunch of subjects, but I have two situations of relatives and friends that I'd like to help out, get their house more efficient. And, the one's a household of two, one's a household of five adults.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, that changes things a little bit. So in the order of payback and priority, and, of course, cash flow has a little bit to do with it, they both have the opportunity to go to natural gas. And my first question is, do you have to change the boiler or can you just change the gun?
Usually you can change the gun. You can get a conversion gun to go in many boilers. So then the question is, will the boiler be compatible, and is the chimney up to snuff? Because it really is critical that it be a flue that's not going to be damaged by moisture, because it's going to be a lot more moisture in that exhaust, potentially.
Yeah, okay. See, I've never known any gas installation not to include a new boiler furnace.
Well,
seems like they always do that.
Yeah, and I think there's reasons for that, and primary one would be, you can usually squeeze a lot more efficiency out of a newer boiler. The trade-off is that, what's the life expectancy of the new boiler that has higher efficiency that is has the potential for more corrosion issues?
The new boiler would have...
A new boiler, more. You know, a new high-performance wall-hung boiler. I always have this concern. As you pull more BTUs out, you're getting closer to condensation range, and are these heat exchangers going to stand up? I mean, we're talking about an old cast, not an old, but let's say a Pensotti cast iron boiler, and you put a gas burner in versus a oil burner. I think that Pensotti is going to last a lot longer than the new wall hung that would be a much smaller, lighter heat exchanger that's going to give you better thermal performance.
Okay, that generates another question where I saw corrosion on the hot water system where they have an instantaneous boiler. Have you ever run into that? Of course, there's no anode rod in that type system, so I wonder if it lets corrosion.
I don't think it's any more or less common. Dave, I tell you what, because I know you sent me your list ahead of time here, I'm going to ask you to hang on for a minute because I got to take a break. Otherwise, we're going to get way behind.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Just hang on for just a minute, and we'll take care of business here. If I could find the tune, there we go, and we'll be right back. It's hot and cold. Stay with us. All right, we're back. It is 9:19 here at the Voice of Maine. We got Dave waiting on line one, I think. Hey, Dave, you still there?
I am.
Okay. All right. Where were we?
Well, on gas boilers, instantaneous boilers and corrosion, I've seen this a couple of times where there seems to be corrosion on the hot water side of a faucet, but not on the cold water side of a faucet, on city water, and wondering where an instantaneous boiler doesn't have an anode rod in it. If
I don't know,
it's
that's
going to be more corrosive.
It could be. I can't imagine it would be much, and I don't think there's, you know, the anode rod is there to suppress corrosion from the steel. And, you know, an instantaneous water heater is all non-ferrous materials, so it may just
but
be...
But the rest of the system's copper.
Right.
So you can get some corrosion on the copper is what I'm seeing.
Well, I mean, the inside... Well, non-ferrous being non-iron, the copper being a noble metal shouldn't be corroding, in theory. I suspect it's just hot water is... maybe the anode rod suppresses it from being an issue. I've not seen that. I haven't lived with an instantaneous water heater in a while, but I've never seen it as a major issue. And I guess I would just check the water pH to see where it's at. I'd be wondering if there's a water issue there, even if it's town water.
Yeah. All right, back to gas conversions. So the minimum you'd probably have to do is change the gun and line the chimney, I would think.
Yes.
Okay. So just keep that in the back as far as paybacks and all that. Then the next thing would be adding a boiler mate.
Yep.
And as opposed to or in addition to a heat pump water heater. So in one situation with a two family, we would definitely add a heat pump water heater because they have a live-in basement. They need to dehumidify the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And the boiler is about on the opposite corner of the house from the kitchen and most of the use. So you turn on the hot water, it takes like 3 or 4 minutes to get hot water. So if we sat a heat pump water heater right under that area, they'd have it more quickly.
Yep.
And then they could shut their boiler off in the summer.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd be inclined, it's a bit of a trade-off there. I guess if I found a good deal on a Boilermate or a stainless steel like a Superstore, I would consider that. But the deals on the heat pump water heaters are pretty good. It's kind of hard to not consider them.
Well, I was able to pick up a couple Boilermates for just $100 or so.
Yeah.
So
well,
that
supersedes the heat pump water heater in my book.
Well, they still got to dehumidify the lower area, so I think both of them would be when they're running the
yep.
boiler, they use the boiler mate, and when they're running the heat pump, or when they're not running the boiler, they also have a heat pump in the house. So in those times of year now where they don't have to run the boiler, they can heat the house with a
right
heat pump as well.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So for a family of five, the same situation, probably the heat pump water heater isn't quite as effective because the demand's going to be so high it may not keep up and the boiler's got to run anyway, so the boiler mate in that situation might be more practical.
I guess it depends on usage. Where you've got a $100 boiler mate, I would start with that, and then you could always retrofit it with a heat pump water heater if you want. I would think that, if there's not teenagers and there's not high instantaneous use, I mean, if it's an adult getting in and taking a five-minute shower, I think a heat pump water heater would keep up with that all day long, even back-to-back showers.
Well, I think it's a working household where all the showers may occur one right after the other, bing, bing, bing.
Yeah.
And I have retrofitted a boiler mate with one of the heat pump water heaters, but man, that's a lot of hassle as opposed to just hooking it up to an electric hot water heater.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Then to me, the number one payback thing is putting in these interior storm panels over windows. That seems to be like a no-brainer for energy savings.
Yeah. And those, I forget the name of the group that does that, folks who make these windows this time of year do a really great service because they're very affordable and do a great job.
Yeah. So I guess when you talk about payback and investment, a lot depends on how much cash they got to spend, too, because even with a rebate on a heat pump water heater, you're still going to be out $600 or $700.
Yep.
Yep. Actually, yeah, five, six. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. All right, Dave. Well,
thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Talking to you. Keep up the great work.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Let's do this. Let's do that. Hit that button there. There we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, so can we get back to the more important things?
Okay.
Okay. About the music and the banjo playing.
You got your priorities. Good.
Okay. That first song, the Grateful Dead song where you mentioned the banjo.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to tell you, but you're the only one in Maine that heard that banjo part, because the banjo was on the other channel that we're not broadcasting.
It was great. I want to tell you, it was really good. It was just like the 1969 version you guys got to hear.
Hey, check this out. I'm so used to listening to certain songs, you know, and there was like another song you queued up, and it was totally missing the guitar, the main track that everybody connects with.
You know, anyway, I try to get mono versions of this in the morning when I'm trying to cue stuff up, and I realize, I said, you know, it sounds okay here. Maybe it's all right. Sorry about that.
Hey,
it gives you reason to check it out yourself, though. And you could just play it over and over and over again like I would do.
Yeah, well, here, I've got an idea. Since I've been suffering through this for going on 8 years now that I've lived in Maine, and Rick and George, they don't seem to have a grasp on it. Why don't they just take the unplugged whatever channel left or right that's in, because it's not mono and it's not stereo. It's we're getting a left channel or a right channel, but we're not getting both.
Mm.
And we're not getting both mixed in. So maybe if somebody just unplugs something and plug it into the other one, we'll get the second half of all the stuff we've been missing for the last 8 years.
Well, I'll confer. I mean, the engineering staff doesn't always listen to anything I have to say, but I'll see what I can do.
Yeah. Maybe you can show them the discount rack on at Radio Shack.
I
can get a little splitter.
I have a feeling it's a pretty simple a deal to get it converted over. And honestly, I do look for mono versions if I have the presence of mind getting stuff ready, because it is annoying, especially I can hear it sometimes here, just the one track, and it's like, oh God, this is awful.
You know, they said they broadcast, you know, not in stereo because it reaches further. And I understand that, you know, you get the stereo flicker thing where it's, back and forth. But if they just mix the right and the left channel together and then put it out in stereo or left channel, whatever the sucky board runs on, then it'd be good.
But, I'm not going to tell the board you call it sucky, because it's been a nice board to me so far today.
Still fingernails on the chalkboard.
Yeah, it is. All right. I'll see what I can do. Thanks.
All right. Bye. All right,
bye-bye. It is frustrating. I apologize for that, just because I realized that as I was playing that tune this morning that was probably stereo, but it's hard to judge here because I've got the headphones in one channel and the speaker in the background in the other channel. And anyway, I've got a text message here, and then we got to take a quick break. The wheels... If Toyota Prius goes four-wheel drive, all those electric motors would have to have speed sensors and some sort of computer program to synchronize the wheels for turning corners. Yeah, but that actually is a fairly simple. There's a lot of ways to deal with that, and some of them are very simple. And that's not an issue. So I that's least of my worries. Having dealt with the, if you were running DC motors, you can wire the motors in parallel or series, and they function similar to a differential. The way a differential would perform. I agree with fixing the feed to hear stereo. An FM station that can't play stereo? Question mark? Question mark? Question mark? Question mark? Yes. Yeah, I agree. And just. As the caller said, they the reason for that is the signal gets out further as a talk station and with only one channel. But we can mix them. In theory, it could be mixed together into one. But this technically is not a music station. So so it may ultimately fall on my broad shoulders to make this all work. Anyway, we got to take a break. It's 9:30 straight up. It's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning. Stay with us. Okay, there's a mono tune right there. No missing channels on that one. All right. It's hot and cold. 9:36. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. And the magic line number 3 is lit up, which means only one thing. It's time for Pete. Hello, Pete.
Good morning.
How are you?
How's everyone doing? I've been on in a couple of weeks. You know, people probably don't realize this. When I'm not on, you get inundated. You get flooded with upwards of 3 to 4 inquiries as to where I am.
Yeah. Well, people want to know.
That's like 30% of the listener base.
Yeah. Well, you know, people, the inquiring minds want to know what's up with Pete. And they say to me, what's wrong with, what's up with Pete?
I caught the Freudian slip there. What's wrong with him?
Yeah. Did you drop that boy on his head when he was young? Only once.
Not too many times.
No.
What are you doing?
I'm just sitting here living the dream. having people get upset because we don't broadcast in stereo.
We don't broadcast in stereo?
No.
I think that's more a problem with their stereo.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Pete, hold your microphone a little closer in your face. It's a little muddy sounding.
Yeah, sorry. It's I'm on my cell phone. And,
yeah.
I always sort of angle it away from my face because I don't like it because the phone splats. I'm always afraid I'm going to push a button with my cheek.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
All right.
I hate the future.
Yeah.
Hey, what's the deal with this 2007 Silverado here? Is that, can I put that out?
No, Maria. Well, yes and no. It's available, but we're still cleaning it.
Okay.
We just got to vacuum it a little more. Maria, you know, Maria gets kind of fixated on making it perfect. And
she's got a real thing with the vents.
What's that?
She's got a real thing with the vents.
Yeah, she likes to clean the vents, and that's she does good detail work. But it is available. If you want to put it out, just get all her cleaning stuff out of it, and we'll keep pushing on. I am going to undercoat it too with some wool wax.
Can we lift that?
That sounds a lot better. Whatever you just did to the phone, that don't change it.
I want to change a thing. Are we going to be able to lift that truck with our?
No, we're not going to lift it. I can crawl underneath. It's high enough off the ground. I get
So for people that don't know what we're talking about, we've got a 2007 Chevrolet Silverado 1500 quad cab with a cap, with a bed liner, 152,000 miles on it. Got a new windshield, 4 new tires, new ball joints, new control arm, new gas line, new brake lines, new tailgate latch assembly, fresh oil, fresh state inspection, and we are giving it away. We're giving it away for $79.95 plus tax and title.
Hey, Pete, can I ask you to do a favor? Can you hold the phone so you're facing it because you're really still kind of muddy sounding?
You know, this is why I call in from the business line and not my cell phone. But then you complain that I call in from the business line and then it's all crazy.
Well, they both have their weaknesses. That's a lot better. Thank you.
Okay. I'll just sit very uncomfortably so everybody can hear me. I can hear me. I don't understand what everyone else's problem is there.
Yeah. Your phone is not great. I'm sorry. This is the bane, though, of radio is cell phones.
I'm taking this personally.
Don't take it personally.
You know what? I'm going to close. I'm closing for the day.
Okay.
Go back to bed.
All right. So the Silverado runs like butter. I mean, that's a nice truck.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to come in and snatch that up. I mean, $8,000 for a Chevy.
Yeah. And it's a long bed with a cap.
It's not a long bed. You know, you told me it was an 8-foot bed. I went and looked at it this morning. 6-foot bed.
It was 6.5, probably.
I don't know, but it's a very long truck overall. It's quad cab. It's got 4 doors.
Yeah. You can take the whole family, and it's not all torn up.
It's not. It actually is. I mean, a lot. Most trucks, the interiors are pretty chewed up. This one's nice.
Yeah. So.
Must be a grampy truck.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, Pete, we've got a phone call on line one. Well, it's gone.
Okay.
We talked too long. We lost that one. We're good at this. We're good at this. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. If you'd like to call in, text line is 601-207-4478. And
remember a couple of weeks ago I asked for car keys. A 16-year-old named Ray who collects car keys. I delivered the car keys to him. He was very excited. And so I want to thank the people that gave the keys. There's a guy, I don't know his name, he runs a sort of an old car stuff shop next to the toy museum in South China. He gave me a bunch of them for a buck. Justin from Mark's Garage gave me a couple of car keys to things that have been scrapped out. And a gentleman named Sean from S.E. Flynn and Sons Plumbing in Exeter stopped in and dropped off a car key for young Master Ray as well. That was very nice of him. So they were all very much appreciated. I'm super excited. I thought I was doubling the amount of keys he had. He comes out with like one of those shoebox-sized Tupperwares. It's filled with keys.
Wow.
Filled with them.
And he's 6 years old.
He's 6 years old. He's got all these BMW keys and Cadillacs and Mercedes. And he's got a Porsche key somewhere. He couldn't find it. There was one key that wasn't labeled. I pick it up. I said, what do you think this one goes to? He goes, that's a Saab. Mind you, he is six.
Yeah. All right, Pete, we got a phone call. Let's go over to line one, okay? See what we got.
Okay.
Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Hi, this is Lee Landry. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good, Lee. How are you?
Not too bad. It's been a while since we talked, and I was listening to you on my way up north, and I thought I could help out the guy with the gas conversion.
Yeah, what do you think?
Well, I think doing anything other than replacing the boiler is putting lipstick on the old pig. If you're going to spend the money on anything, you know, having to get.
I think we lost you, Lee. Lee is headed up north.
that's evident.
that was, well, I appreciate the call, Lee. Well, we got the gist of it. I'll preface this though, or comment, knowing Dave, he's going to not buy a gas burner new. He's going to scrounge one up that's used, as he did with the Boilermates. So, but I hear what you're saying, and you certainly will get more performance out of it. Let's see, we've got a text message just came in. Ron is looking for a mid-size SUV. It's good in snow. I live in Maine, single mom with a year and a half old. Any suggestions what might be a good value? I don't think you go too far off with a CRV, Honda CRV, or even a Honda Element. Though, as a matter of fact, Pete has a Honda Element for sale.
I've got it's a blue Honda Element. It's on Craigslist. It's $59.99. Now, here's the thing. It's got 230K on it. Catch your breath. It's been extremely well maintained. Mileage doesn't mean anything. Don't pay attention to that. Okay. They just go and go and go. I mean, I had one that had almost 400K on it before.
Yeah. You could shop those around, and they are very durable automobiles.
They do go very well in the snow. I'm actually surprised for what is essentially such a light SUV. Mine just has cut through everything every winter I've had it.
Yeah. And there's a number of other ones too but those are the ones that we usually deal with. The Highlander, Toyota Highlander, we'll get in. But those are the ones we deal with, are hybrids. Ford Escapes, they tend to be cheap, and there's underlying the cheap part on the first and second generation. I think the second generation a little bit better. I like them. I Ford Escape Hybrid, I think, is a pretty decent automobile. The catch is that they tend to rust in odd places.
Recycled steel.
If you know that and you know where to look, it's worth dealing with. A regular first generation Escapes, which I think were 02 to 07, had some transmission issues they didn't have the transmission issues with the hybrids. The parts tend to be reasonable, I've had a few. We've sold a few of the Escape hybrids, excuse me, they've been okay. The Highlander SUVs we have, those are bigger. Those, I guess, I'd call that a midsize. I don't think that's
a midsize.
That's not a full size. I guess Suburban would be a full size. But we got another text here. Tom, love the show. What's the best way to store an electric golf cart for the winter? what do you do with the batteries? I would disconnect the batteries, and I would have them on a battery maintenance charger that also is a desulfator. I think Northern Tool sells them. They're pretty inexpensive. And what that's doing is maintaining the charge and also keeps it from sulfating up from just sitting. So obviously you need to disconnect the batteries if you're going to do that. So that's that one. And the phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text is 601-207-4478. Pete, is it raining down there? Because I want to do some more shingling today.
It's not really raining, but it it's that sort of gray where you know it could just start at any second.
Great. Great.
Yeah.
My plans are dashed. Did the office smell of paint this morning?
It took me a while to figure out what that smell was. I was like, why does it smell like paint in here? What was he doing?
Well, I left the door open for a while. I was messing around trying to let it dissipate a little bit.
Yeah. So,
all right. We've got a line one call here. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hey, listen, I have that Chevy Impala.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. The guy that called you earlier that talks about the older cars and the new cars.
Yeah.
I know mechanics don't even want to look at some of these cars.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's an artificial intelligence. Here I am driving it, and it's telling me I need an oil change on the dashboard. I'm going, what? I mean, and I called the guy up, and he said, oh, well, that's normal, you know. But how much is an oil change anyway now?
$30, $25,
$30. Oh, that's not bad.
No.
My God, can you believe it? It tells you, and you got all kinds of electric things for the side windows, and the doors lock, and I go, oh, my God, I feel sorry for anyone that has to work on these things.
Well, I don't think the Impala is that bad to work on. I've never worked on one, but I don't think they're horrible.
Well,
and
that's good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the newer ones, like that guy that called.
Yeah.
it was cracking me up because I think that he, you know, really, I had another car, and a lot of the mechanics, they don't even want to look at them.
Yeah, yeah.
At the newer cars. And this friend of mine, his daughter, has a car. She has a few children. It's going to cost her $80,000 for a new car.
Wow.
$80,000.
What was That's she getting ridiculous. For $80,000?
Huh?
$80,000 or
$80,000? $80,000. And it's a car that she has like four kids, and she has a bigger, and she has one now. But to replace it, it's going to cost her $80,000 for that car.
Wow.
Whatever it is, I don't know what the heck it is, but
okay, that's about.
He just spent one. He's a policeman in California, $30,000 for a car, but everybody says that's not much.
No. Well, okay, it is for me.
So thank you for the music and thank you for your time.
Okay,
you're incredible.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, you're just saying that because you don't know him.
Yeah, $80,000 is like six times my first house, seven times my first house.
Yeah, you could get a decent house for $80,000.
Yeah, you could you could shop around and find something decent.
I got cars. I'll sell you for I'll tell you what, $12,000. How's that? Any car on the lot.
You could probably buy several cars. You could go away with two cars for $12,000. I think.
I think we could probably squeeze three out of it.
We could. Yeah, we could actually. Yeah, you're right.
Consider that. I mean, if you bought, like, instead of buying an $80,000 car, if you bought like $5,000 cars. You drove each one for 5 years.
Yeah. Put the other ones on cinder blocks.
Except for the next 80 years.
Oh, man. I got another text message here. I have a 2007 New Style Silverado. I've gone through two AC Delco batteries in 2 years. Are you hearing issues with AC Delco batteries? No, because I don't usually deal with trucks. That was kind of a fluke that we got this one. We got it. I bought it for myself for our shop for plowing, and I got it.
Let's sell it.
And it runs so nice, and it is such a nice truck. I said, let's. And it's too long. I mean, if you've seen our shop, we have a pretty small area to maintain right now. It'll be bigger over time, but still, it was kind of long for what we needed to do. So we decided to let it go, and somebody who can use it, who needs a crew cab in particular, you know, this is a good opportunity. Let's see. Over to line one, we got another call. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Tom. There was a caller that called in about the storing electric golf car.
Yeah.
I just wanted to share that the key on electric golf cars is they have a charger, but Did you know once the batteries are fully charged, the charger will click off? So what you have to do is unplug the charger and then plug it back in several times throughout the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I've noticed is that if you replace a golf car batteries in the fall, they won't make it through to the springtime, because I don't know if it's a, you know, I know you have a lot of experience with batteries, but they don't tend to sulfide as much, and so they don't really ever get a deep discharge and then recharge back.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, those batteries don't seem to make it through. And the last thing I want to say is newer golf cars are actually coming out with lithium-ion battery packs.
Right.
But the problem here in Maine is the chargers, I've noticed, they don't click on unless it's 60 degrees.
Yeah.
So, electric golf cars, keeping them through, 6 to 9 months, keep them through the wintertime, and having the batteries last is definitely a challenge.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Appreciate your call. I'll stand by my comment. If you have a golf cart, you're better served to have the battery, disconnect the batteries, because there's not usually that many batteries, and have them on a desulfation charger through the winter. Not use the golf cart charger, because that's a different, that's for putting big current into the battery to charge it on a daily basis. When you're dealing with having batteries sit for the winter, you're just maintaining them. And the problem is, if you just maintain them without desulfation, you're going to get into mischief. I'll give you that as a written guarantee. It's a lot easier. A little trickle charger that desulfates is not a lot of money. So it's way cheaper than replacing one battery. So we got time here for one more call. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
I got a question. So I know you're pretty much pro with batteries. I hear you talk about them a lot with hoods and whatnot. But this might be a little different. So I have a drill set. It's a Makita drill set. Pretty much brand new. 20-volt lithium-ion batteries.
Mm-hmm.
I had it in a storage unit all winter. I took them out, and it's still the battery read full charge. But using them, they die out, in 15 minutes.
Yeah, we lost. Geez, we're losing everybody. We're having great phone service today. I think lithium batteries in particular, I think you have to maintain the state of charge with, well, any battery really, you have to maintain the state of charge. I'm afraid to say that you probably have a cell that's gone bad in there, and it may be that you can I hate to say it, but I think you got to replace it. It'd be good if it's under warranty, because I think that's where you're headed. I don't think it's going to come back unless you're into taking batteries apart and replacing cells, which is not easy to do because they're welded together. They have little tabs welded on them, so it's not an easy fix. Let's see. We got a text here. Any tips for desulfation off the grid? You can get a desulfator that operates independent of a charger. So it would just go across the battery. You can Google that or get on eBay and look around. I would be dealing with a commercial desulfator, not a do-it-yourself. There's people who make their own that sell them on eBay. I would be skeptical as to whether or not they're going to stand up, to the service, they're even going to work. Let's put it that way. But there's a lot of information online about desulfation, and if you're using lead-acid batteries, it makes sense to be doing that. So, Peter, are you going to go fling in the fall today?
No, probably not.
Oh.
I'll tell you, what I did do last night? I tried an experiment. I made tacos with Manwich.
Yeah?
It was okay.
All right. Well, you don't have that Foreman grill anymore, so, your life is a lot simpler.
If anybody comes in and buys a car today, they're going to have the leftover Manwich. How's that?
Will you make them a taco and heat it up?
No, come on. I got stuff to do.
Okay. All right. Well, Pete, we're out of time for this week, so I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
I'll see you in a while.
No, don't threaten me.
Okay. Well, it is what it is, pal. You paid the price of admission. And we're going to head out. We'll see you next week, same time. You get a chance, go down to Searsport, fling in the fall weekend. Oh, boy, there's going to be stuff going on there.